Hello. Natalia, are you there?
Are we on?
Yeah.
Hi, Amanda. Yes.
Hi.
Yeah, no, I just said I'm so happy to be speaking with you and our listeners. It's feels like it's been a long time, and it's certainly been a long time since you and I have had the opportunity to speak. So
yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, well, welcome back to the States.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I wish I could say I was more excited to be here.
Back.
It was such a fantastic trip, and it's funny to see. It's always good to get out of your own country for a while to kind of be able to see it with new eyes,
mm-hmm.
and for that, it was also a very useful sojourn.
Good. And Electra's first trip, right?
Yes, and she did extremely well. She basically sucks on boob the whole way there and the whole way back. So no screaming baby. In fact, the passengers applauded when because when you see a baby coming on board on a huge trip like that, it's 16, it's the longest direct flight in the world from New York to Johannesburg. And, you know, I was kind of rolling and people think, oh, my God, you know, and they just, she was just the most amazing little passenger. So I attribute it all to breastfeeding and to, you know, to her and I kind of knowing what to do in any circumstance, because that's really, you know, the one thing we can always go to.
I know. It's so interesting because Sophia is definitely teething right now. And it's so it's like she is, we call them mommy shakes, and she's like, loving mommy shakes, like pretty much. I feel like if I would sit down and have her breastfeed all day, she probably would. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and is she biting you too?
No, she did a couple times, but I you know, it was just that instinctual. I was like, you know, it hurts so bad.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of scared her, which was a little bit sad. But she's only done it a couple times. And then she hasn't done it really much since then.
Yeah, it's wonderful to get past that because I know with Tendi, that really put me off.
Yeah.
She was really quite determined to make a meal out of the teat. And that just wasn't flying. But with Electra, she seems to have gotten the message, but she did try a few times, and she thinks it's funny.
Oh, my God.
But Sophia is now 18 months, right?
Yeah, 16.
16, yeah.
Yeah. I know that they say that they'll wean naturally. I'm having a really hard time envisioning that at this point. It's like,
I'm glad you say that because I'm really having an impossible time. My husband says, you know, so what, like how long are we gonna have her in our bed and you're just like nursing like this? I was like, well, you know, I just don't know. And you know, and I'm glad that you know at your stage too, you're not putting any pressure on yourself.
Yeah, no, I'm looking and going, wow, I think she's gonna want to do this forever. Jason's like, well, eventually she'll stop, right? And I'm like, I think so.
I think they eventually. They certainly don't need it in the same way, like if for nutrient, but they just want that coziness. So I think eventually it just comes less and less. And how often would you say you're pulling out the mama kitchen?
The mama shake. Yeah. It just depends on if I'm around her all day, then it's like, you know, probably five or six times. She doesn't mm-hmm. feed in the night though. But if she's away from me, she's fine. I mean, she does. Mm-hmm. It's like out of sight, out of mind.
So she's sleeping without you at night.
Right. Yes, that was a huge change for us, and it was actually amazing because she was in our bed. And then she was in the hammock, the baby hammock, in our room, and she was waking up like two or three times a night. And then finally I was just like, wow, this isn't working for me, and I don't think it's working for her either. So we tried her in her own room in the crib, and that was probably like 3 months ago. And she slept through the night the first night, eight hours. I was like,
really?
Oh, my gosh, wow, interesting. So I think I got the sense, I felt like I was almost distracting her when we were sleeping together. So if I felt like she was ready to sleep more, and so it worked out really well, the timing.
That's interesting because you do wonder, like, without needing to use, I can't really remember the transitions with my older children now. It was so long ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, to not have them use the methods that the pediatricians would have you use, where they scream their heads off for, you know, for 3 days for 15 or 20 minutes.
Oh, yeah. No, she hasn't had to do that.
No. Yeah. And but she naturally just transitioned into that. I wonder.
Well, we rock her and we soothe her and then we put her in the bed and she doesn't wake up anymore,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which has been really good. So I mean, I feel like the sleeping in the bed and then sleeping in the room was all really good for when we did it, and then now I feel like all of us were ready for a little bit of space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, I look forward to maybe having the same kind of experience in another. Well, Alexa's now 10 months, so maybe in another 6 or maybe she'll do something similar. It gives me some optimism. I'll share that with Lawrence. He'll be happy to hear that.
Awesome. Well, so you wanted to start the call. Well, actually, can I just say, I have to say this. I have felt like I've been with you and Doris for the last 3 weeks or so because Jason got me your cookbook or the new cookbook for Christmas, and it is phenomenal. Like I was really in the sweet potato and all that, which I love, super simple and just easy, but I have this renewed enthusiasm and excitement to try all of the recipes, and they're so good. Last night we had the lentil veggie burgers, but Jason and I just had it with romaine lettuce, and they're so good. And everything I've tried so far has been amazing. So really well done. I mean, it's beautiful.
I'm so happy that you're enjoying it. I'm so embarrassed that you had to get your own copy. I got them. I started getting copies when we were leaving for our trip, and it got so hectic, and I just realized, oh my goodness, I've neglected some very important. I actually haven't sent books out to anyone, even the wonderful people who have written endorsements on the back. So I'm just kind of dropping the ball on everything except for what immediately matters to the home. In fact, it's something that I do want to talk about in the call as well, and why that kind of needs to happen for a lot of people, even if they let people down. So on the one hand, I'm really sorry I let you down. You didn't get your book from me. And that was very sweet of Jason. And I apologize to everyone else out there who hasn't gotten a book from me. Not that, they'd necessarily be listening on the call, but there's so many people that, would not, in a normal world where people actually did things according to normal business rules, would have one. I think I've kind of torn up all the blueprints for normal business and socializing and anything that's kind of typical in the mainstream world, because I'm realizing just how much space is needed in one's life to connect, to begin the unified field, collecting and receiving in order to do something positive with it, the source energy. So I've kind of gone off the grid in a different kind of a way, not something that is easily explained to people who, wouldn't kind of get what I mean by that, just like you will and our listeners will. But it's something that at some point in the call I want to address and why that's so important.
Yeah.
You made me think of it given the fact that I neglected to send you a book.
That's okay. Yeah. But for anyone on the call, the new cookbook is just, if you need to be sort of infused with some new inspiration, it's awesome. I mean, it has been well worth waiting for. And it's, just beautifully done. The pictures and the everything is just, I'm really proud of you guys. It's amazing.
Thank you. We had a great photographer and we had Doris. Doris really is the star of the show.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we wanted to talk about teens and sex.
There's so much to talk about. I don't even know how we're going to get to it all in one call. Do we have a lot of questions to take? Can we dive into some of this stuff?
Yeah, we have a couple questions from that have come in via email, but just a couple. And I think we can talk about this first.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk about the overruling concept of how our children's minds are basically taken over. And they're taken over by so many different, there's so many different pathways that enter into our children's minds. They come from us. They come from the media. They come from school. They come from their peers. When I say the media, let me emphasize entertainment, music, TV, movies, Of course, video games, but I think movies, music videos probably have the biggest influence, especially as we were talking about teens. And, you know, there's a big gap in the Life Force Families area where we've been promising to address teens. And we sort of have, you and I have made some recordings, we need to post them, but it's an area where I thought maybe today we could explore a little bit about teens, and maybe we even post this up on there a little bit. But mainly, there's this teens today are much like all of society today. There seems to be these two groups, and there's the ones that are totally brainwashed and totally, you know, in the hypnosis, and then there's the others that are just so incredibly uncomfortable with the way things are operating. They have one foot in the hypnosis and one foot kind of trying to find a place to put it, because either they're going to put it in suicide or drugs or rebellious behavior, or they're going to find some sure footing that's going to help them understand that they were just caught up in the mass hypnosis and actually is not what is useful for humans, and certainly not for them at their stage of life. So the difficult things are how they express their displeasure with it when they're coming to that sort of subconscious realization, and then when they start to look for outlets and footholds. And then, of course, there's the set of them who are under hypnosis, who are kind of expressing themselves the way these teens who are under hypnosis express themselves, which is that sort of typical behavior. And so that's all very, very sad. And there's these kids who are wanting to find something that's much better. So I want to just kind of address, it's almost like there's three categories, even though there's kind of, it's kind of like a tale of two teens. And in the category where they're trying to find their find something better to land on, these kids are really receptive. And they really want better information. I encounter teens from all over the world who are super hungry for, they don't need a whole lot of explanation to get it, for it to ring true with them. That dietetically, that media-wise, education-wise, career future-wise, all these things don't add up that they've been told should work and that they should do. So they're super receptive. And if you have one of these teens, if one of these teens is one of your teens, don't hold back for them, and don't feel like you have to be, you just give them the information they're looking for. I'm meeting kids from all over the world. I'm amazed, from Romania, from South Africa, from Finland, from France. They're just coming in droves from all over the world, and then they're getting it, and they're putting it together. So I want to say for them, we need to give them the best information that we can to help guide them. And then the other two groups, who are the one looking for a way out but not finding a good one, not very clear-headed, and the others are under the mass hypnosis, we need to help them unplug from the hypnosis and to find that that sure footing. And it really, as parents, it comes down to us acknowledging where we've been under a kind of a mind control, and really taking our minds back and thinking very carefully about everything we've ever been told about anything. And and I bring sex into this, and I sort of spotlight it, underscore it, because sex is used in every single category to manipulate consciousness. And it's hugely destructive. It's hugely confusing, and it also creates a life trajectory path for kids before they are able to identify what's really meaningful in life. So it's totally disruptive the way it's presented. And, whether it's, some sort of bigger entity trying to do this on purpose or not, the fact is it's what's happening. So young kids today are being exposed to pornography. They're getting sexuality all over the place in mainstream television, in primetime television. Language used to have, there used to be some boundaries around what, like, language on primetime major network television, and now it seems like those have, you know, almost completely dissolved. So it's basically in your face all the time, this kind of, these variations of what I can only call pornographic. And so we need to help our teenagers, our kids, but if kids are being exposed to it, of course, but our teens especially, make sense of why they're being manipulated through sexuality and how to contend with that in a way that they can walk out having honored their being. And there's so many aspects to cover with that. Am I going too far too fast?
No, I don't think so. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to get a fourth phase here.
And I just want to say, anyone, as Natalia's talking or as we're talking, if you have anything to that you want to add, go ahead and press 2 on your keypad, and we'll weave everyone in so we can have a conversation. Go ahead, Natalia.
Okay. Well, a few things. One is that our teens need to know that it's not – I want to take the moral question out of it because it makes it so much easier to address it with them if it's not about right and wrong and, you know, what, you know, maybe your religious affiliation says about it, because that will just confuse them. If it's about abstinence versus, you know, being free with one's sexuality, that's going to be become a conversation that's going to get messy. It needs to be about something much more tangible. And the things that are tangible are, for example, even though some of these things may seem more esoteric, they are indeed tangible. The energy field, the body, when it mixes with mingles with another person's, is going to take on all the experiences, all the psychic stuff that the other person's been exposed to, and all the psychic stuff that the other person has engaged in sexually with other people. So we often give our kids the argument that, you know, when they're having sex with somebody, they're going to have sex with everyone they ever had sex with, because they're going to wind up with their, you know, any kind of diseases or anything the other person's contracted from the other person. But it's much deeper than that. It's much more dangerous to mix with other people's energy fields and the other kind of entities that are on them that can then attach to the person that they're attached to themselves when they have sexual intercourse or sexual interaction with this individual. So the unseen fields, the unseen worlds are very present in sexual relations. And, you know, in speaking from a spiritual perspective, if we're talking about something that your religion advocates or not, that's, you know, Christ says our war is not against flesh and blood, it's against principalities and powers. So, indeed,
it's not against flesh and blood, it's against what?
Principalities and powers, meaning spiritual, meaning unseen forces.
Yeah.
So we can call them entities and angels, if you want. So on the one hand, we have the entities, on the other hand, we have the angels. So so that becomes a battle that starts to take place on the field of this teenager's being, and a battle starts to be waged for that individual soul. And that's really, you know, when I think about, now I'm going to go a little bit off deep in here, but when I think about these forces, and these forces, the fact that there's a yin and yang, and a let's call it loosely, an evil and a benevolent kind of force at play, is not a bad thing. It's good that there's two forces at play, because it makes that's what creates evolution. That's what makes us. If it's too easy to make the good choice or the benevolent choice or the choice that leads to evolution, then there's no friction. There's nothing that's going to make it powerful. It's the fact that we have the choice and we take the higher road, given both roads. So we're not. I'm not trying to, create this concept of, you know, one is bad, and we want to get rid of it completely. It's good that it's there, because it creates its growth in us and all living things. So the interplay of the forces, again, we can call them, you know, evil and benevolence, can be very beneficial. But when there's an overgrowth of the evil forces, just like there is in the bacteria in the gut, the battle's going to be won by that, you know, rogue bacteria side. And so in the same way, when there's two forces at play and they are at battle for the individual to progress for growth, then that individual will be choosing, in order for it to grow, it will be choosing the higher even in the face of the lower. So, but if the other scenario takes place, it literally leaves the individual in the grip of the lower forces. So it's literally like a swallowing up of the soul at that point. And that's why this is so incredibly dangerous. It seems like it's no big deal. Like, you know, you watch the, you know, PG-13 movies, or you watch the commercials and all these drinking songs. I don't know if anyone's noticed, but I used to be a huge fan of country music, you know, real authentic country music. And sometimes now, you know, I'll still check it out. I stopped watching country music videos because they just became, it just so base. Mm-hmm. And it's funny. I mean, I miss watching country music videos. What can I say? You know, but it's something that my friends who still love me know about me. But now I look at them, I've just got to switch them off. First of all, the music is pretty bad in of itself, but there's just so many drinking songs. And it's like there's just this desire to bring everyone down to this lowest common denominator state. And when you're in a state where you think it's okay to just like knock back red plastic beer cups all day, and the only thing you're looking forward to on a Friday night is a tailgate party, and you know you're watching, I don't know, the zombie TV show, you lose your strength to take the friction in the world and transform it into something that creates human growth. So it's actually this kind of lifestyle that's being presented in the mainstream is anti-human, the way I see it, you know, and then everyone should, you know, look at it, make your own choices. But from my perspective and what I know about natural law, it's undermining that which is human. And to me, that becomes extremely dangerous, because then we get too weak to actually make the big decisions when they actually matter. So it's like, get everyone into a nice little hypnotic lull, or what's the word I'm looking for, like a mindlessness, and get them really comfortable, get them addicted to all these comforts, and, you know, what are they going to do if their TV show's not on, and what are they going to do if, you know, if they don't get their fix of a cup of Joe in the morning, all these things they get addicted to, their flour, their sugar, their entertainment, and the specific kind of undertones of these, of the flashing of the screens and the background noise and the beats from the music, it's all part of that hypnosis. And whether you think it's coming from, you know, some kind of original source that's trying to undermine the human race is beside the point. The fact is that these tones, these flashes, and the you know, beats per second, and all this stuff is having a hypnotic effect on people. So it's having this effect on your teenagers. And so it makes it very, very easy for them to just fall into into very base choices when it comes to their sexuality, because it just seems like, well, it doesn't really matter. Everybody's doing it, but everyone was doing it in the 60s, so it wasn't quite the same thing because there was still enough good bacteria in the gut in the 60s. We're talking about the gut of humanity. There was still enough good bacteria there. Today, it's so whitewashed. It's so weak. The integrity is so completely absent that it's all just dissolving into, or I should say not dissolving, but kind of just falling apart. It doesn't have anything to hold it up anymore. So this is where, again, just to bring it back to the whole point, is the connection between teens, their minds being usurped by this hypnosis, and the act of sexuality, and linking it all up in a way that I think any teen who can see it this way would have a real problem with someone or something taking away their power to choose and turning them into someone who just does what they're told. Because the one thing that teens hate is doing what they're told to do. So if they can just, if we can just point out to them that they're being doing what they're told to do, I think they'll take their minds back on their own, take their sexuality back on their own, and that will give them a huge amount of renewed power, because then all the decisions are made around sexuality and relationships, because really the only thing we see in relationships portrayed in the media is around either sexuality itself or some kind of emotional gratification. And those are the two things that undermine relationships and what sexuality is intended to do anyway in relationships. So it's a true madness that I think if the parents listening can get their heads around it, and or the, even if you don't have teenage kids, you can see where it's going for your own kids and prevent them from kind of catching the virus. I mean that figuratively and literally. And you probably have teens in your life that you may or may not explain it to them quite in these terms, but just the fact that you have this awareness, you might be able to shed some light on it when they come to you, or you see that they're dealing with a situation related to choices around sexuality. You might be able to help give them a new perspective.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and everything that you're talking about is one of the main reasons why I've created PeleMa TV, because it is sort of what I see as like an antidote to what is in the mainstream media. It's the whole purpose of it is to leave people feeling empowered and energized versus the other, where you sit in front of the other TV and you feel zapped and tired and sad. But also is another reason why sexuality is one of the topics that we cover the most, and why children and teens. Because the thing is that they're using shame and guilt, because the same way that you're saying they, whether or not it's a they, like a big, you know, power or entities or just lower vibration, whatever you want to think of it as, if we're seated with shame and guilt, which is basically the lowest vibration that we can have within us, if we're seated with that, it is impossible for us to experience the true empowerment of sex, of sexuality. We as humans cannot reach that realm of empowerment and energetic expansion, however you want to think of it, but that true state that is intended through sexuality, we cannot achieve it if we have shame and guilt around that. So, and we cannot achieve it if we don't feel, especially women, if we don't feel completely 100% safe in the situation that we're in with our partner. So all of this is so, to me, it's like, well, of course it's going to be this kind of thing where you're pulled to the sex, but then sort of made feel guilty and shameful about that, you know, and that pornography is one of the main ways that is proliferated. You know, people are watching it, but they're watching it, you know, behind closed doors and while no one's looking. And so there's all this shame and guilt around that. And you know, one of the episodes we have is with a men's panel, and it hasn't come out yet. It'll come out in a couple weeks. But it was amazing to me because every single one of these guys, and they're in their mid-30s or, you know, late-30s, every single one of them had their first experience with sex that they can remember through pornography. So it's like, it's prevalent, it's everywhere, and it is this thing that just works on people in this very subtle way, and really keeps us from experiencing what we're supposed to experience with sex, which that is another spin for the teens, is that what you see in the media and what you see on TV and on the movies and in the songs, that's like nothing compared to what it can be. I mean, that's just like the mechanics of it. That's not what it can be. It can be so much more, and this is what has to be in place for that to happen. So, you know, and most you know, teenage boys and teenage girls too, aren't there yet. So it's not that you need to wait because you need to wait till you get married, and you know, you need to wait because it's not ethical, like you said. It's because there's so much power and potency in that act, and you need to be ready for that, you know, so that you can tap into the beauty of what that is. So, and so does your partner, because it's harder. It's hard to do. You can do it alone, but that takes a lot of practice, and that takes a lot of know-how and skill. So you can do that alone with a partner who's not willing, but, you know, why would you, why? You know, you can find someone who is able to go there with you. So, you know, there's a lot. There's so much here, and I think that there's also hope, and I feel like you, Natalia, the teenagers that I encounter that are in my life that I get to talk to, I'm shocked at how it's like right below the surface they know all of this. So it's like you just kind of need to broach the subject with them, and they're nodding their head in agreement. They're understanding everything that you're saying. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of hope there, I think.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's just getting them informed and raising awareness around it for them.
Yeah.
And giving them, and I suppose also just that if they could feel it in numbers a bit, like if they could discuss it amongst themselves,
yeah.
You know, that would be so liberating too. That would, you know, because I think there's so much secrecy, there's so much of a sense of, well, what I'm seeing around me must be right, and I must be
exactly.
the only one, so let me do what everyone else is doing. Like,
exactly.
I was amazed. My daughter is now, she's 12, and she'd probably hate me talking about this, but she went to a party the other night, and, you know, it was one of these Upper East Side parties, and there's like DJ, and it's all like super, super posh, right? And she said that the girls in her class, she's in sixth grade, were dressed provocatively. I mean, I dropped her off at the door knowing the parents and stuff, and, you know, she gave me this look like she really wanted me to go. She didn't want to be embarrassed, you know, and I probably should have gone in and checked it out a little bit more, and, you know, you learn as you go. But I was pleased she wasn't dressed provocatively, even though the first outfit she put on was kind of, I was like, no. She was showing midriff. I'm like, we're not going to show midriff. You can show a little shoulder, you can show a little arm, a half, you know, below the knee, but, you know, that's all the body parts are going to be shown. But the girls were really, you know, I saw a couple of them at the door, and they were dressed provocatively. And apparently they were like, there was some grinding going on at 12 years old.
Are you kidding me? That's the only kind of dancing you see on any of the videos. Like, they probably don't know there's any other kind of dancing available to them. That's all that they see.
Yeah. And fortunately, my daughter, she's like, I thought it was gross, and I wouldn't want anything to do with it. And she was actually delighted because my husband went and picked her up early, and she couldn't seem to collect her things quickly enough and want to leave, you know, more eagerly. But, you know, that was a bit of a relief, but, you know, how long is that going to last? But I think she, you know, she sees the madness. And even though I sound maybe like a broken record and I get really pedantic, you know, and that may be bad parenting, you know, I'm always pointing out where I think they're being mind controlled. And, you know, because they do want to sort of, you know, play some of these games and watch some of these shows and listen to some of this music, you know, and I'm the first one. I'm in the background kind of calling out that, you know, it looks like Satan worship to me, and it looks like, you know, vulgar, you know, whatever. And, you know, it's sort of like, yeah, Mom, you know, but I think it kind of gets through in its own way.
Yeah.
And I think they see the grossness of it, you know, because I don't do it from, you know, sort of a right and wrong religious perspective, but more of a, you know, really this where you want your mind to go. You really want it to be taken over by this kind of depraved kind of, you know, perspective that they're trying to infiltrate into every single young mind in America so they can buy their stuff and take their drugs and take, you know. So it's hopefully that will pay off in some way, or hopefully maybe who knows, it can backfire. But the point is that she was disgusted by it. She came home, she told me all about it, which was also kind of not typical of her. But I think the problem, though, becomes that if they see each other doing this stuff, and if they have no other message,
right,
then they're going to think, well, they're not going to be cool if they're not doing it too. And so it becomes this, it just becomes part of the madness. So how do you think teens could broach this with each other to try to have a conversation amongst themselves that would open up yeah, the pathways of communication a little bit. Is that something that you might have an answer to?
Well, I'm using my own know-how and methods to do that. So I have teens coming on the show, and for me it's like because what I think is if they see other teens talking about it in a different way, if they see, you know, cool teens, I'm doing the quotes, if they see cool teens talking about it, and if they see examples of even celebrity teens and some of these teens kind of stepping out from that and being like, hey guys, like, we don't have to do this. Like, we don't have to do any of this that we've been told is cool. Like, it's really not that cool. And here's what is cool. And, you know, I feel like it is, like you said, it's getting the masses talking about it. And sometimes that just takes a few really brave ones to come out and be like, you know, like one of the 16-year-olds that I talked to, you know, she started having sex with her boyfriend, and she really thought that she was weird because she wasn't having it. And when she got her boyfriend, she thought everyone else is doing it. Well, now it's been about a year, and she realizes that not everybody else is doing it, and that it's actually this source of tons of conflict, tons of tension in her relationship with her boyfriend. She doesn't even really know if he likes her for her, because all he ever wants to do is have sex. So she's like, I wish I could go back. Like, I wish I could just go back and never have started it. But so it's like teens maybe have already gone through a little bit of it, talking to the kids in sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade, going, you know what, guys, it's not that cool. And, you know, let's have a different vision. And not the whole, I mean, I remember when it was like, remember there was that teen thing where they would wear the little bracelet that basically said they aren't going to have sex until they're married. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that?
Well,
anyways, that felt really religious. So that was like a real, like, you know, we're Christian and we don't have sex, or, you know, whatever the religion was. And I think if they can do it from more of a, hey, you know, we're humans, like we're teens, and we can really stand together and change things with each other.
We don't need to comply with this sort of pull, this tug, this kind of unseen thing that's pulling us into the riptide or the quicksand,
exactly.
Something somewhere where we don't really want to go. It's funny because I noticed that the boys are equally as shy and confused. You know,
yes.
They're not really sure. In many ways, the women or the girls are leading them because they want to
they
look
are.
Like they're got it all together.
They are. The girls are leading. And that's why, I mean, the thing with the guys are, I mean, I feel, again, this panel I have with the guys here, I was like, oh, my God. I mean, the guys are just as or more confused than the girls or the women. I think in their 30s and 40s sometimes, too, I don't think it's like it goes away when they're done with their teenage years.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I think it is. I think it's the women or the girls coming together and saying, look, this is what we know is possible, and we're going to wait. We're going to hold out until we are ready for that, and then until you guys are ready for that. I mean, I think
in the meantime, not acting like teases and not having to.
Exactly.
It's such a mess when you pull.
Ugh.
So if you pull out the sex aspect, you don't want it to become this. Well, you know, but we're going to wear these clothes, we're going to dance like this, and we're going to, you know.
Yeah. Well, and we're going to do everything but have sex.
Right,
I mean.
Right. The infamous lipstick parties, which I know you want to talk about. I don't know if anyone's heard of those. But, it's exactly. So it's really a matter of, how to put this, kind of making these relationships, even just friendship sacred, making their peers sacred. And because if it's kind of like the whole namaste principle, if I say I see the beauty and the sacredness of you, you don't need to say I need to pick myself because I'm so bloody sacred, you know.
I know
like, you're my brother, you're my sister, you know, I think you're worth way more than you think you're worth, then I don't need to say that I'm worth something, because then it's implicit in that.
Exactly. Well, and the thing with pornography, again, is that it's like impossible to have a connection with the person that you're with if that's what is in your mind is the pornography. Mm-hmm. And so we're totally missing any connection. So like you're saying with the namaste or the aloha breath or, you know, any of these ways that you really, really connect with people, then it'd be impossible to go back and do that other way. It would be impossible to do the zero connection sex and the zero connection dancing and all of that everyone's doing. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, and in fact, it makes me think about, you know, when we talk to children about not about making sure that no one touches them inappropriately and stuff. You know, we always say, well, look, you know, if something feels wrong, it probably is wrong, you know?
Right.
It's almost like we need to have the same conversation with teens and sex, because there's a confusion they have. There's this kind of animalistic urge, lack of a term, the kids have. And they think that because it feels good, it is good, but at the same time, there's something that feels wrong. And they're kind of ignoring that because of this very visceral thing that feels good. And, you know, to understand that everything should feel good. You know, it shouldn't just be the body part that's being in some way, you know,
stimulated.
Thank you. It feels good. It should be the whole experience. And if something doesn't feel right in that experience, then, you know, and it's inappropriate and it's not right and it's going to sit with you. It's going to be like it's going to have a residue on you. You don't want that residue.
Right.
But then also, by contrast, you've got these girls who are exposed to things and boys who are exposed to things at a young age they should never have been exposed to. And so there's also a process needs to be done to help them shed the residue of those experiences so they're not carrying that with them into their sexual future and thereby mm-hmm. having, you know, the wrong kinds of experience and perpetuating the problem. So there's this sort of detox of experiences that have been damaging to their field and their
emotions. Well, and Natalia, that would be everything. I mean, literally from the time they're little and they start seeing the images on TV. I mean, if you just look at look at five commercials and the amount of degrading sexual images of women,
mm-hmm.
I mean, like probably pretty much every commercial. So it's like from the time they're even pre-conscious, you know, or, you know, I don't mean that, but from the time mm-hmm. that they begin being exposed to any of this, they're getting images that are confusing and degrading. So every single person, to me, in my opinion, has a lot of healing to do around what it means to be a human, a sexual being, a female, a male, you know, all these things. So, I mean, it's going to be endless in terms, well, not endless, but I think every single person has healing to do, for sure.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think also with that, you know, there are probably a lot of different ways that people can, a lot of different tools that people can use. But, you know, don't overlook your own intuition. The clearer you get, the more aware you become.
Yeah.
And the more you become aware of yourself as a part of the network of the life force field and you see the purity in that and the beauty in that, you can use your intuition to shed anything that's not that. And you can create a little ceremony for yourself if you want to. You don't have to. You can go into meditation around it. There's so many things you can do. Don't feel like there's like one way to do it. I would say
you have to go to a therapist or, you know, sit for hours and, you know, you don't have to do any of that.
Exactly. You know, if you find someone that you find is very helpful, then great, but you can do this on your own. And it's simple as acknowledging that which you've accumulated that is not that pure essence and mm-hmm. saying, and just kind of, you can surround yourself with light and let it go into the light. You can surround yourself with roses and the roses can absorb it. You can just imagine it leaving you. You can just see yourself in your perfection, which is a really great thing to do where you just see yourself without it. And then you continue walking through life without that story. You see it. You can identify it as a story and something that happened as part of your journey on the earth in this lifetime. But then it's simply a story. It's simply, you know, something that you've agreed to accept about yourself that you no longer need to agree to accept about yourself. And then you just shed. And you might do that many, many times before you feel thoroughly rid of it, but that also fully depends only on how quickly you can walk away from something that's purely residue. It's not like when you have colonics, you have to have, you know, all these colonics because you've got so much you're awakening and releasing. You know, this is consciousness stuff. You can release a lot at once. I mean, you might feel uneasy if you release too much at once, if you see yourself in your perfection immediately. Some people, they can do that, and that it feels much better to them because they've seen it so clearly. They're so aware of the fact that society and everything they were exposed to put baggage on them that they don't need anymore, that they never needed, or they needed maybe just to have this one epiphany where they could walk away from it. But that's enlightenment, literally and physically, and figuratively. You become immediately enlightened when you start to become aware of this and let it go. So whether it's sexual impressions and experiences that you accumulated early on and you've taken into your future, into your journey, or it's those things that were that are being projected onto your future. It's just by becoming aware of them and rejecting them. But when you become aware of them, become aware of all the tentacles they have in different areas of your life too, like your career, like your body, like how you, like you pointed out, Amanda, all the roles we take on as women. You know, just the things we do because we see other women do them, even though it, there's a meaning to women, and even if they're not directly connected, they don't seem obviously directly connected to sexuality. You know, just the roles that women have accepted to play, and so we do men a great favor when we do that as well. So
absolutely, yeah. Yeah. Good. Okay, well, if any of you have a question, please go ahead and press 1 on your keypad. And Mara, I see, I see that you have your hand up. Mara, are you there?
Is it me?
Yeah.
Hello?
I see that you pressed 3. I'm not sure if that was a mistake or if you had something that you wanted to say.
I think it was a mistake, but I do have something I want to say.
Okay, awesome.
Great.
So I'm trying to figure out how to convince my husband that my six-year-old, you know, shouldn't be watching TV. I mean, she can't focus on anything. She's interested in, you know, materialism and looking at girls and what they're wearing on the Disney Channel. And I just want to have the TV, like, completely shut off. And, you know, and he just thinks that it's better to teach a child how to regulate. He doesn't believe in the black and white of it, like taking it away. And I just don't see how a child who is given the choice to either try to read a book or watch the Disney Channel is ever going to choose to try to read a book.
Yeah. Yeah. Natalia, do you have anything that you want to say?
Well, I mean, I've been very how do I put it? I've allowed my kids to watch a little TV here and there, and didn't switch it off and throw the TV out the window. But that's also because I think my own entertainment limitations. I grew up with so much television that it took me quite a while to kind of wean myself off, and so I think there was a part of me that felt like maybe they needed a little bit of entertainment and that, you know, they should be able to enjoy a little bit of entertainment. I saw them, but I didn't see the same, habits. Like my daughter is very alternative. My son is too in his way. They're not going to mimic what they see on TV. If I saw them starting to mimic it, and they don't watch, you know, they'd never watched much. In fact, for the first 10 years, I never even let, maybe say 8 years, I never let them watch TV. I should say I let them watch videos like Mary Poppins and that sort of stuff. They never watched mainstream television at all.
Right.
Only movies, high-quality movies like Annie and Wizard of Oz, that sort of thing. But when they got to be like maybe around 8, 9, 10, I can't remember when it really happened, they became curious because their friends were watching some of these shows, particularly, like you said, the Disney shows. So, you know, I let them watch a bit of it, and I, you know, I thought it was a bit silly, but I didn't see them mimicking anything. If I'd seen them kind of turn a corner, and I think maybe it was not, I think maybe it had a lot to do with the fact that they didn't see it from a very young age. So maybe there's a way, especially because a six-year-old is so impressionable, maybe there's a way of convincing, sorry?
He's mimicking for sure.
Yeah. Maybe there's a way of getting your husband to agree to swap out the television for high-quality movies that you guys deem appropriate. Because they're much more interesting anyway. They've got the Sound of Music. There's so many great songs and things. And then, you know, then if the choice is, you know, either no television or no screens. I always call them no screens in the house because they can be any kind of screens. No screens or... you know, good quality movies,
okay,
then maybe he'll agree to that. Maybe that'll be a good, and yeah, I mean, again, I think there's just such a, there's so few families who are going to unplug the television completely, although I do see it happen. I'm amazed by it. I think it's a really remarkable thing. And I'm over television now, but that was a journey that I had to take. I think there's such an addiction like anything else. And maybe your husband also feels a little bit addicted.
Neither my husband or I ever watch TV. We never have. I mean, that's what's so strange about it. We we never turn the TV on for ourselves. It's not even like he thinks, oh, well, I'm going to be a hypocrite, or oh, I want to watch it. It's not even that.
Yeah,
I think he's. Well, I think he's going to go for the. I mean, it seems like, you know, if there may be some sort of, you know, I don't want her to be. Is there some sort of I don't want her to be like left out and too like weird?
Where nobody has a TV. It's an Orthodox religious school, and nobody even has a TV except maybe 10%. So,
wow.
So she's even bringing things to the kids that they shouldn't even be exposed to, number one.
Oh.
But he feels like, you know, he was raised in an environment where, you know, there was a lot of gray, and he thought that was good. And he thinks I'm very black and white, and to take the TV away from her 100% would make her not able to regulate herself.
Well, this movie thing sounds like gray, right? Because it's not a black or white.
Right.
And then it sounds like there's something, I mean, it's like the things that maybe you two are working through, maybe if it can be contained to the things you're working through and not having to be worked through with your daughter.
Right.
You know, because obviously there's some issue with you being too black and white. So
Right. Maybe
if you can keep those to, like, you know, whatever you two are going through and not bring that onto her. And that we've done the whole only movies too, and it's now we're just down to only movies on weekend nights because it's amazing. So Sophia was never exposed to TV from the very beginning, and she has zero interest in it, even when the movies are on, zero interest. And Madeline still, I feel like we're weaning her from from her first earlier days, but you know, it went from movies, you know, several times a week to now just movies on the weekend. And it is a thing that I'm okay with her emulating. I'm okay with her running around and doing Broadway shows, you know, in our living room. I think it's fun and it's creative. And so, I'm just echoing that. That's worked for us as well. So.
Okay. Yeah, and, you know, it's so true. When we're away and there's no, I mean, living in an apartment in New York City, we don't have a backyard. We don't have a balcony. So I think there were concessions that I felt just for my own sanity needed to make. But when we were away for the last 3 weeks in South Africa, there was no desire to watch TV. Nobody even, not even movies or anything. I mean, you know, we enjoy our movies, like watching movies, you know, sometimes, you know, as a family. And there was not even a desire for that. So I think it also has to do with lifestyle. And as long as we're cooped up, I think we're much more dependent, and it's another reason to get uncooped, which is, you know, what you've done, what I'm aiming for, what hopefully everyone will be able to do soon. But I think that changes the dynamic a huge amount. I mean, if you've got a backyard, there's no reason to even there's another reason not to have that kind of unnecessary entertainment. But there are so many good movies, and maybe we should make a list of them. I remember my daughter was obsessed with Cats. You know, she loved the Broadway show. All the Broadway shows have their movie versions. And the kids, that's at least something that will, with the music and everything, really stimulate them in a positive way.
Annie and Mary Poppins are two, like, amazing ones. And they're fun for you and your husband to watch, too.
Yeah. Oh, and She Bang Bang. I mean, they're such good quality. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Mara.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mara.
All right. Okay, so we have a question here from Kristen. Hi, Kristen.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes. Hi, Kristen.
Okay. Good. Sorry, I just had to do this speaker switch here. Hey, my question is actually something I emailed a while back, and it's about having a concern of my 3-year-old having blood sugar issues. And I don't know if this is an okay time to ask that question.
Oh, Kristen, yes. You know, you sent that email to me. I beg your pardon. Well, I was away on vacation, and I remember seeing it. I'm so sorry I wasn't able to get back to you.
Oh, do not even apologize.
So just refresh my memory a little bit. Give me the landscape. So I remember you had emailed something back about, well, maybe it wasn't the blood sugar. It was
Basically, the one day that right after I didn't know exactly what the best choice would be, but I didn't want to take her to a doctor, so I decided I'm just going to try a diet change and see what happens, which it can be very hard with a three-year-old, but I tried to make it exciting. But right after I started that, she ended up getting sick with a fever for a day, which is very odd in itself because she has only been sick like one other time in her life. But anyway, taking all that out, now that it's been almost 4 weeks since I tried to take, basically she would tend to ask for food all the time. And I know there can be emotional issues and stress. I try to take all that into account as well, but I can only do so much. But she would ask for a lot of food, and she would tend to always ask for fruit because we tried to leave that out for her all the time. But she would overeat a lot, so she would tend to be, it would make her bloated, it would make her constipated, and she would have sharp highs and lows. Mm-hmm. And when I started incorporating fruit with other, like a lot more fat and things like that, and not letting her have that for snack, and I started just letting her have fresh walnut milk and my vegetable juice. I don't have fruit in my vegetable juice for snacks. It has seemed to help, but I just want to see. I guess I just don't know why she would even have blood sugar issues, and
but
if that's what it is.
Did the doctor say that she was had low blood sugar? Low blood sugar?
No, I didn't. Because she would get super emotional after she would eat a lot of fruit, and if I have sugar, I have a hard time digesting it too, and I find myself getting having sharp highs and lows from it too, getting frantic, and then having just wanting to sleep, like a really big dip. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I hear you. Well, I mean, if you're seeing that happen with the fruit, and if she does have a blood sugar imbalance, you know, it's easy enough to rectify it just by, I mean, you might not be able to rectify the lineage of it and make it such that she can just eat fruit and not have that issue, but you can certainly just adapt her diet to. I mean, you know, it's very easy to take something like this and put a diagnosis on it.
But
the real move to me is that it doesn't really matter if there if one person reacts one way to fruit, another person reacts another way. We say that one person has a low blood sugar and issues or blood sugar issues, and the other person has more of a balanced blood sugar.
Okay.
Instead, what I would say is, forget all that kind of rubbish. What matters is, how does this individual react to what they're eating? And if they're not reacting well, it doesn't matter what the diagnosis is. What matters is that they don't eat that way in a way that makes them imbalanced. Because one person's blood sugar imbalance can be another person's other imbalance. We're constantly overcompensating. What we know is that the body's imbalanced. It's living in an inharmonious environment, so there's going to always be some kind of manifestation of imbalance. Yeah, it takes the stress out of it for you if you're not looking at it as a blood sugar problem, but you're looking at it as, here's how she reacts to a whole bunch of fruit. You know, and the other thing that taking into account is that, the fruit, it really, who knows how it's grown? I mean, even if it's organic fruit, unless it's coming out of your orchard in the backyard, being grown the way, say, Anastasia would have it grown, where the seed is going to pick up on all of your nuances and all your physical needs, then, it's being grown en masse, probably picked underripe. If it's organic, it's great, but most likely there's some sort of GMO contamination because it's just a pervasive problem now. There's so many factors, and who knows what she's reacting to. And if she's one of these star rainbow children, which I'm sure she is, she's going to be particularly sensitive. The kids, they're coming in with very, very high vibration, really over the last 30 years, but now in the last, 5 to 10 years, way, way more so, and then in the last, 1 to 5 years, even more so. So they're the planet savers. They're the ones who are just totally, their antenna is so sharp, they physically have a hard time tolerating any imperfections.
She's very, very much like that. She is incredibly sensitive to pretty much everything, and I don't mean like detrimentally. She just picks up on everything and she articulates it, and she tells me, and she's always been like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's beautiful. And so you let that, those children should just be categorically, they should be child-led households.
Yeah.
I mean,
they should be what?
You know, child-led, meaning that, you know, the children should lead their parent, you know, within reason. The parent should obviously use their best judgment around things and all the things that you know to be true about, you know, the laws of the universe and what's good for, you know, everything that you know to be true. But let her kind of let you know what her needs are. Let her show you by her symptoms and by her strengths. By, you know, I often like to remind people to read the conversation that takes place in the universe and in their own bodies, where pleasure is expressed. There's a communication that something is good, if something is working, and where pain is expressed, something is not working. So the pain becomes a call for change. What is that pain pointing to? What is it identifying? What is the pleasure identifying? So then you just get a really foolproof way of determining what is working, what works in your life, in her life, and what doesn't. And you can just watch her, and even without words, you'll be able to read this on her and direct your next steps accordingly.
Well, and Kristen, along those same lines, knowing that it's not a problem, you know, knowing that there's not something wrong with her, knowing that she is built that way for a reason, and that's a good thing. And like Natalia said, so then just allow her to cue you to what, I mean, these kids coming in are going to be teaching us way more than we teach them. So it's like we can start that process now.
Okay. Now, when you guys talk about, you know, like the hierarchy of food and how clean fruit is, I feel like there's still, like, in the back of my mind, I think, well, even if she can't eat that way now, and, you know, that progress will mean that someday she'll be able to eat that way. You know,
well,
is that
yes
true?
And no. Remember, the other thing I always like to draw people's attention to is that we're in a living universe. Everything's constantly shifting, and there are constantly new issues. So whereas 10 years ago, GMO was barely an issue, now it's a huge issue.
Okay.
So there's so many things that are constantly fluctuating, and can you undo all the damage of, you know, of 20 generations of lineage? No, you can't necessarily do all that. So what I would do is just watch and just be very observant. If you can get your hands on really high quality pure fruit, you'll probably see she has a different reaction to that than she would with other fruits. But it also depends on what's in her gut at the time. Is it too much fruit? Period. Because we would be balancing out our intake of fruit. In a perfect world, there would be very little intake of food at all. It would be some fruit, some greens, but there would be this bathing of the whole human field in the most pure, negatively ionically charged air. We'd be like soaking ourselves in the life force, the water we drink, the water we bathe in. Everything would be so charged with life force. So we basically are taking all that away. We've got, you know, acid rain. We've got acidic air quality. We've got radioactive materials, the pollution that we swim in. And, you know, the cell phones a whole bit. And then we're eating contaminated food in a body whose lineage has become defunct. The lineage has caused the physiology to become defunct. So we're basically asking for the impossible for our kids to be radiant and healthy, and despite that, we can do the best we can do. But don't, if you keep yourself too focused on that aspect of her and the trying to measure yourself as a parent by the perfection that she can have, the embodiment that she can have of the things we talk about theoretically in this work, then you might miss the bigger picture. That she's, you know, that there's a moment of a crossroad moment on our planet where these things that have caused all these problems I just identified are going hopefully to be rectified, because there's going to be such so many kids coming in with this awareness and this inability to be be pushed around by all these untoward agendas, and it's going to change it. But it had to get to the stage, I think, in order for it to reach this kind of a fulcrum event. And that's what's really exciting. But in the meantime, you have so many great tools. You know, you know so much about the hierarchy of foods. That's great. That's you know so much about how these other things can play upon your child and take away what she's come into the world with, and you can protect her from all of that, from a lot of it. A lot of it she needs to experience because she needs to understand the world that she's meant to be changing. So that's another thing. We can't overprotect them, because if we overprotect them, they won't make sense to them why they're even here, and then they'll really get confused and frustrated. That's part of why I feel like with my kids, I give them the space to do a lot of the things that their friends do. I don't let them do a lot of the things their friends do, but I'd like them, in their own way, and especially my daughter's way. It's interesting because she's so exposed to a particular kind of experience with a certain echelon of society based on where she goes to school and the people that she hangs out with. And I don't think that's bad for her. I think it's part of her soul's journey for her to mix with this very jet-set youth group, because she's going to understand it, and it may be that she has a really big role in changing that. And if I try and pull her out of that or point to everything that's wrong with it, I do point to a lot that's wrong with it. But, if I try to protect her too much, and say, we all will have kids that are exposed to things because they're hopefully going to play a really big role in revolutionizing it in a positive way.
Well, thank you very much. That's very helpful.
I hope so.
Okay, thanks, Kristen.
Thank you, guys.
Okay.
Okay. Do one more, Natalia?
Sure.
Good with that? Okay. Shannon, I see that you have a 3. I'm not sure if you have something you wanted to ask or say.
Hi, both of you.
Hi.
Hope you're doing well. Hi. So just to comment on the themes earlier that you were talking about, Natalia, I recently, we moved here to Texas, and I was in church. I've been given the opportunity to work with the girls between 12 and 18 years old. And the majority of our girls back in California were from very affluent families and things like that. I have 2 parents at home. Here, pretty much all of them are it's very low income. There's mostly only one parent at home, and it's not a pretty situation, so to speak, like alcoholism, things like that. And so us leaders, the ones who are over them, we feel this such an urgency to fight for them and to help them fight for themselves and to help them establish just these basics that you're talking about. And I was thinking about this whole thing, and I've thought about this a lot, is that like a girl's relationship with her father affects so much how she views her worth and how she interacts with the boys around her, how she respects herself in relation to them, and how she also respects them as a guy, building them up, encouraging them to be a strong man, a warrior, not to be like, he likes me, does it for me, but to really be strong in who each individual is as a male and a female. And but a lot of our girls don't have a dad in the home. And so helping them establish this, it's in a very spiritual sense, helping them understand what it feels like to really pray and to feel that love as an individual being, as a daughter of God, we talk to them about, and being strong just in themselves, who they are, with or without a dad being in the home. And some of our boys, too, not having a mother figure. It's a similar thing. They learn so much about who they're going to marry and how they interact with the girls around them, with the relationship they have with their mom. If they respect their mom and the women in their life, they put that onto the other girls, and they see them as a princess. They see them as valuable. And so any of the parents who are out there, any of the dads, I am always encouraging them. I just encourage them, if any of them are listening, moms and dads, to be completely courageous and bold and confident in their relationship with their child, in the sense of that respect and that safety and security, because that will affect how they treat other girls and other boys, and how they allow themselves to be treated by other girls and other boys. It'll be very clear to them. My sister-in-law is one of the biggest examples to me of this. She's 21, but her relationship with my father-in-law is beautiful. There's no way she would ever do anything to destroy that, you know, or to just place that trust in her that he has, and vice versa. And it's just incredible. So the openness they have with these dating and stuff, it's really cool. And so, but helping these other girls to see that, their value, is one of our biggest things as the church, as our leaders, in our leadership, is to really help them learn their own personal worth, their value, how to honor virtue, and choosing the right media and things like that. And the music, you know, you were talking about the music, and I'm a musician and a singer, and I teach music, and that's huge for me because I listen to all the words. I analyze the music, and a lot of times, like, my husband listens to music because he loves the beat. He loves how it sounds. But I'm listening to the words, and I'm just like, holy cow, can we turn this? And that's kind of a risk in our home sometimes, like constantly changing it. And so it's something that has come to my attention, that when children do come, there has to be an understanding of why, what's going on, so that there's peace in the home, trying to bring peace in the home, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it made me laugh, Natalia, when you were talking about the country music, because I totally agree with you. And there was one song actually I did just here recently that I've always loved. I can't remember who sings it, but he says, every time, every woman I see, I think about you. You know, 8 years old, big blue eyes, heart of gold. I remember every woman in the world was once somebody's little girl. Mm-hmm. And I always tried to share that with, like, my brother or my husband or anyone. When these images of women come on the screen, remind them that that's somebody's little girl. Somewhere in the world, she's precious, and that needs to be valued. Whether, you know, and so instead of saying, turn that smut off, you know, or something, but just really kind of plugging that in that way, and bringing value to our nieces, you know, the little girls, and really giving my husband and everyone just really pushing the importance of, not just the importance of, like, they have a duty, but really highlighting how valuable their role is and really how much it means. Speaking from a woman who, you know, kind of craved those things growing up, the security, and that just I didn't have it necessarily in that way. And so speaking from that point and being able to share that with these girls, so I can relate to them in that sense, and the whole, you know, knowing their sexuality, knowing what it's for and why and how special it is, and keeping everything in the positive and neutral, like you were saying, it's keeping it very, you're bad if you do this, or you're good. It's taking that many labels out and just really educating each girl in her own light, so that makes sense. So that's a place that I'm in right now. I'm taking one of the girls to her counseling session tonight, and and so just being there for them is something that is just really strong for us right now, and teaching them about the media. And because the music they're listening to is very hard, some of them. It's not necessarily even like bad messages, you can't even understand words really. It's just so hard and kind of numbing to the body, you know, and to the mind, and I see that happening. So when that happens, the numbing, it's hard for them to distinguish, you know. And so we're trying to do our best. One of the things I was excited about is we talked about making each girl a playlist of, like, some of our favorite church songs that we grew up with as youth that were really uplifting, inspiring, positive, and then doing, like, another CD playlist of just really happy, uplifting upbeat mm-hmm. songs that have really positive messages for them so that they have something to listen to that they can just download and know that it's from us, that we love them. And so those are just things that have been in my heart and on my mind. And I was really pleased that it was just really nice that you were bringing this up, because that's where I'm at right now as a leader and reflecting. And I hope you don't think that my dad was. He was fabulous, absolutely fabulous. But it was just a different experience, and I can relate to it. So anyways, thanks for listening. I just wanted to share that.
No, you said so much. You said so much. In fact, my crown chakra was just going nuts when you were talking the first part. I think the girls are so lucky to have you supporting them in this way. And I think you're a great speaker on the subject. I think everyone... I think I'll speak for everyone telling you this. I think it's something that it's a real gift you have. You have a way of communicating this very broad subject matter, and yeah, I think you might want to do something even more than just work with the girls eventually, if you feel ready to talk about this on a broader scale. I think that the impact that the father relationship has and the mother with the sons is really a critical thing to remind people of, and I think that the value aspect, reminding these girls of their value. And it does bring up something else that I think is worthwhile keeping in mind, especially with girls who are given the reminder of their value and the value of their sexuality, the value of their virginity, if you want to call it that, is that we don't fall into the trap of making virginity the kind of the holy grail. Not to say that sexuality shouldn't be protected until marriage. I think that concept is a wonderful one, and I think that's probably, when we become evolved and we treat each other sacredly, that's probably what will kind of go back to. I always think of that on Pandora, in the movie Avatar, where they link up. They imprint upon each other, I think, and they imprint for life. I love that. I think there's a funny backlash, though, that happens when girls are they kind of hold fast to their virginity, and it becomes like this holy grail, like this thing that the virginity itself, like the opening of the gates to the man, becomes the thing of value. And I think it loses the point is missed. And that was impressed upon me when I was young. And it kind of in my mind always became about this idea that was where my value lied lay. And that if it was, and then the moment that, that was taken or it was over, it was kind of like getting married. Like you do it once, all this build up, but then there's no marriage on the other side of it. There's just a wedding. There's again, around sexuality, there's like all this build up around the virginity, and then there's no real sacred sexuality behind it. And I don't know, it's just because I think that in the Christian community, there's a misunderstanding of the value of virginity. It becomes about the protection of the virginity itself, as opposed to the protection of the sacredness of the woman. And the value is in the sacredness of who we are, not in this event. And I think if we have that, the value of the sacredness of who we are, then we won't be promiscuous. It will be, again, it'll be implicit in the sacredness of the way we perceive ourselves and sexuality. And that will be a better way of protecting our girls and ensuring their virginity, than this idea that it's the gateway, and then after that it's over, and then that holds value in and of itself. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. And that's one of the really awesome things that we love focusing on is. They have different values and things that in church that we talk about, their divine nature, their individual worth, their choice and accountability, their good works, their integrity, their virtue, and their projects and things that they get to accomplish in these things and in this part of the program. But each one, highlights it pulls out their creative side, gives them opportunity to be creative in that way, and to really keep digging deeper and deeper into this, so that when it becomes, when we talk about being faithful in your marriage or virginity and things like that, that it's really a positive light and that it's very, it's not so hyped up, but that it's very, like, it's a normal part of life. It's, you know, it's what we were created to do, and it's what we're preparing for, and it's going to be beautiful, and look for a man who values the same things and, you know, that values you for you, and the more that they see their own value, the things that we pull out, you know, of them that they're coming across, like just the good things about themselves, the good qualities that they're finding and how they're using it. And as they keep seeing that and they're being valued by other men around them for those things, you know, whether it's men at church, their friends, but they're being valued for those things, that's what's so exciting, is to watch their self-confidence raise like that when they're being valued. Then when the day that they come across some guy who just wants a piece, they're going to be like, yeah, whatever, you know.
Yeah, they can spot that from a mile away, and to them it just looks revolting, right? No, it's true. No, thank you so much. We're going long, so I think we have to wrap up. I am so impressed by your ability to communicate this, and I really hope you do stay on that track, because I think you have a lot to offer there. Shen, thank you so much. And Amanda, in wrapping up, I'd love you to let us know how we can get more on Pelema TV, how we can access it and support
it. Yeah, just go to www.pelema, it's PELEMA.TV, and we have 4 episodes that are live. One called Connected Parents, Connected Children, Peaceful World, and it's with Dr. Patricia Mather. So if some of you remember, we had her on a call a while ago, and so it's she and I talking about how we as parents can connect with ourselves and thereby connect with our children, and then hopefully peace will reign throughout the land. And then the second is about, it's a men's panel, so how we women can help to encourage men to actually follow their dreams and not fall prey to the program that they need to just provide and make money. And then also we have one on sexuality that's amazing. If any of you are interested in exploring sacred sexuality, it's an interview with a woman named Lynn, and she brings a ritual that you can do with your partner that can really bring your sexuality to that intimate, connected level that we've been talking about today. And then the last one that's live right now is about finding win-win-win solutions in even the toughest of challenges and conflicts. And then on Friday, this Friday, we're launching another new one about birth, and it's with a midwife who's done 1,100 births, and it's like, it's amazing. I'm so excited for it to come out. But for any of you interested in learning more about natural birth and, you know, just birth in general, it's a really good one. So that'll be coming out
amazing.
On Friday.
Wow, yeah. Amanda. And are you guys still fundraising?
Nope, that's over. That's over. All of the shows are free and available for anyone to watch. You just go. And then if you want to get alerted when new episodes are live, you just sign up for the newsletter on the right. It's called Get in the Flow. And then we'll let you know when new episodes are live. So
wonderful.
It's all available and open for all.
And get the word out to your friends. I can't wait to see these episodes myself. I know they're going to be fabulous. And this is the kind of stuff we need to be, I don't know what we need to give it a new name other than TV, meaning like, but this is the kind of stuff we can be watching now. We don't have to, we're not beholden. And it's not only is it, I'm sure it's very entertaining, but not only is it entertaining, but it's also going to be educational and instructional and motivational and all these things. So, Amanda, thank you for doing that for us. I know it's going to be life-changing for so many people to get this information. And
labor of love, for sure.
Yeah.
All right. All right, everybody. Thank you, and we'll talk to you next month.
Okay. Lots of love, everyone. Live to your highest good, and know that with all this funny conflict of what we talked about, the benevolent and the evil forces, we can evolve and we can triumph as humans. Even in a moment when it feels like those other forces, those negative forces, evil forces, can take us over, there is the power in the human spirit that just needs to be shown the way to triumph over them. And once it's shown that, and once you start to open up the pathways in your own awareness to see how you can do that, we can all be lifted up very, very quickly. Okay.
Absolutely.
Lots and lots of love. Thanks for listening.
Okay. Aloha, everybody.